Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live today from the Capitol Building in Pierre, the start of the 2016 South Dakota Legislative Session. We're in the Speaker's Lobby, and I am here with Secretary of State Chantel Krebs. Welcome very much to Dakota Midday today.
Well, thank you for having me on, Lori.
And you saw our Korean contingency sort of swarm out of here. There was lots of them.
What a special day. The rotunda is going to be full of activity, but an only appropriate time to honor those that have served our country.
And they said we're the only state that's doing this so far.
Oh, really?
Yes,
okay,
it's not something that's happening nationwide yet. We're kind of leading the charge. So that's
exciting.
Well,
I'm just proud of our individuals that are going to be honored today.
Tell us a little bit for the people who don't know what a Secretary of State does. We'll just start with, you probably have to explain that a lot, don't you?
We do, Lori. That's interesting you ask that. I think the first thing that comes to mind when somebody hears Secretary of State, they typically think on the national level, you know, right. They think of international affairs and travel. But for us, on each state by state has a Secretary of State, and typically each of those Secretaries of State are charged with overseeing the elections. So in South Dakota, most individuals think of us as the chief elections officers, overseeing the elections, election night results. But beyond that, our office, the Secretary of State's office, handles a lot of diverse transactional things that really affect everyday businesses and individuals. For example, we in our office handle all the corporate filings in South Dakota, all the annual report filings for businesses that are doing business in South Dakota. So we know the numbers of the actual active businesses going on. They pay their fee to, of course, file with us and become a business or start doing business if they're from out of state with us. They have to get that certificate of authority. We handle and issue all the concealed carry weapon permits. So when you go as an individual to your county sheriff and ask for a concealed carry permit, they give you that background check, and then that sheriff sends that in to us, and then we actually issued the permit itself. You know, we oversee in our office authentication of documents, apostilles of the documents. So if you're traveling overseas and you need a document authenticated, that happens in our office. We're the official keeper of the seal and all state records and transactions. So when you look at any of the historical documents, those are kept in our office. Trademark registration, fictitious business names, DBAs. I mean, those are all things that we do in our office. But I think the ones that you typically hear is the corporate filings, pistol permits, lobbyist registrations, and of course the elections.
So do you get to do any initiatives from your office to make your job easier or to change that job? Do you have legislative initiatives that your office does?
We do actually this year. Thank you for asking, Lori. One of the areas that I've been focusing on has been customer service. And based on that, again, with the amount of business that we handle as far as transactions, we're actually the first office that interacts with a business. So when we say you're ready to go and you want to get your federal tax ID number and you need your sales tax number, you first need to come with us and get your name registered. So when that happens is that you're registering through us and sending in a document, but you're not able to do that online right now. So based on the response from my customers that use the office, like the businesses, like your attorneys out there that help with these filings, they have asked and requested that we go online to be able to file this online. You know, we're an online society. Right now, you have to manually fill out a piece of paper and send that articles of incorporation in, or articles of organization in, and then we process it and send it back to you. So it's a 5 or 6 day turnaround time frame, or even up to 10 days depending on for mail. So with that, we want to go online so that that individual that's starting up a business can do it at once. We do not need to be bottlenecking business and holding them up. This is a very transactional online on real time society, and many businesses are merging and incorporating at a much faster rate, and that's what we need to respond to. That we talk about in South Dakota being a proactive business state, but our office now needs to respond and doing that by, again, incorporating and being able to file online. So our system, my request, Lori, getting to that, some of my legislation is requesting the funding to go online. And that's a pretty big upgrade on an internet or a web-based user system. So we're asking for some money for the legislature. And then accordingly, we want to realign how our office is run. So I'm saying that if you pay a fee, I will retain about 15% of those fees to run the office. I don't think that the general public who doesn't use the office should be paying those fees. That rest of that 85% of the fees can go to the general fund and help fund education, because we generate in our office $7.5 million to the state general fund. So our office is a revenue generator, but I feel that we should be running it like a business and saying, if you use this office, you pay the fee, of course, to file your business, and then that I should be able to run my office on those filing fees. employees.
So I think a lot of people going back to the online functioning would have expected that to already be happening. Are we fairly behind?
Yeah, just a little bit,
Lori. That?
Yeah, yeah, you've asked a good question. You know, I think a lot of people would expect that. You know, in state government, IT or technology just really kind of lags just a little bit because it's costly. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk to a taxpayer, it's a big expense to do a whole computer upgrade system for filing 120,000 corporations and 80,000 annual reports and sure. uniform commercial code filings, of which, of course, the bankers and lenders need. That we file about 60,000 of those a year. You know, we have a staff of 15 that are manually entering that right now, but we just need to, you know, again, you know, upgrade to the times.
To do that upgrade, where does that money come from then?
That would come from the general fund.
Okay.
And right now it's in the governor's budget as a proposal, so the legislature would approve that appropriation. And then our proposal in our legislation says, we'll pay that back. Give us it's kind of like a loan. We're going to pay that back over the course of time of 5 years for that appropriation to upgrade this new system.
Okay.
So that's
the main push.
That's our main push. And then we have a couple things in definition with election code.
Okay. Let's talk about these ballot and
yes.
issues, the ballot measures. I know lots of people are following those. We're hoping on midday to cover each one with some pros and cons eventually, but give us an overview of where you're at with what has come through and what where is it at in the process.
Good. Thank you, Lori. Well, of course, an initiated measure is spurred by the citizens of South Dakota, and that had to be filed into our office or submitted the petitions where they were gathering signatures all summer long. As some of our listeners are probably remembering, they might have signed one. They had to be due into our office 1 year prior to the general election for November 2016, so they were into our office in November of 2015. We received 8 initiated measures and initiated constitutional amendments proposals. Out of those 8, that means almost, I don't know how many sheets or pages, but 275,000 signatures were submitted. Hmm. We have reviewed and certified 6 of them, and we're working on the 7th one, and you'll be the first to hear, Lori, that we'll probably be finishing up the 7th one hopefully by the end of this week or early next week.
And what is that one?
Number 7 is the initiated measure to give certain organizations the right to charge fees.
Okay.
Now, of course, we're sharing with you the Attorney General's title that has been affixed to that with that explanation when you sign that petition, and that's the official title that you would see on the November 2016 ballot if it's approved or certified.
Okay.
When I talk about certifying, that's a question a lot of people ask. You know, hey, I signed that petition. How do you actually certify these?
Right.
You know, and so
yeah.
I want to just walk through that process, Lori. So when those petitions come in, they're on those sheets and they have to be self-contained, meaning that the petition has to have on the front, of course, the title of the petition proposal mm-hmm. and the explanation from the Attorney General's office, and then it has those signature lines, and it has to be contained, meaning on the front and the back, the signature lines. So the signatures mm-hmm. can't be separated from the title, so
okay.
that you
sure.
knew when you were signing it that front mm-hmm. side said the title.
And you should
title.
Check.
And we're checking
right.
that.
Yeah.
We're looking to make sure the title hasn't been changed, that those petition signatures are in order. We're looking for completeness, but we're actually randomly sampling, as by state statute and administrative rule says, is that we have to sample 5% of the signatures submitted. So if somebody submits 60,000 signatures for an initiated amendment to the Constitution, we sample 5% of those, and then we look at the line, and it generates the sampling spreadsheet generates a page number that we go to, and we'll still go to sheet number 200, mm-hmm. and then it'll say line 17. So I'll look at page 200, line 17, then I'll see maybe, for example, Lori Walsh's signature.
Right.
Let's just use it as an example, and it'll have your address, and it'll state that you're from registered in Clay County or wherever you may be registered. And I'm checking to see if you are a registered voter, like you said you are, and I'm seeing also that you're in the county that you state on that petition. If you're not in that county and you forgot, you've moved, then that actually throws that signature out. So
sure.
I'm looking to see if you're a registered voter and in that county. Then I'm further looking to make sure that the circulator's information is accurate and it's been notarized by a notary public at the bottom.
Okay. So 8 total, one more
yes.
coming, and now does that process slow down a little bit? Because it seems like it's been going fairly quickly.
Yes, yep.
We keep hearing that there's another one. Once the legislative session starts, does that process slow down, or you just keep clipping along?
You know, we're obviously working around the legislative session, so it might mm-hmm. slow down here now that session started, and that last one might take us a little longer because of the activity. We have candidates coming in to get their nominating petitions out. We have campaign finance reporting going on, so the election team is busy with a lot of transactional details. details going on right now.
And so what happens next? You verify it, and then a challenge period?
Yes, thank you, Lori. Good question. So once I certify it, an individual, any citizen, has the opportunity to challenge that decision, and they have a 30-day window to do so. So when I announce the certification or rejection, they could challenge my rejection as well. Say I say, you know what, you didn't have enough signatures or enough valid signatures after we've done the random sampling, then an individual could challenge my certification or rejection, and they'd have to list the specific deficiencies with a signed affidavit saying, these are the signatures we're challenging you on, or the ones that you said that, you know, we rejected, we think that they're valid signatures, or these are not valid signatures, whichever way they want to challenge my decision. They have that 30 days window to do so. Then I would actually review the challenge, each of those specific deficiencies that was listed with the signed affidavit, and then if it's still not the decision they want, they could go through the court process. So that's kind of why you have that whole year to, you know, before the submission date, or the submission deadline is 1 year prior to the general election, so that every citizen has every opportunity to make sure is it appropriately placed in the ballot or not.
Mm-hmm. How often does that challenge process happen?
You know, they've had several challenges over the course of years. You may remember the smoking ban. That was, you know, how many years ago? A couple of years ago. That was a challenge. And I think it was an unsuccessful challenge. It was still placed, of course, on the ballot. So it does happen. And I know our office has already received inquiries and phone calls for particular measures that we've already approved or certified. So
do you want to share who's being challenged? Is that public yet?
We don't. You know what? It's not yet. And I can't, I'll be honest with you. I've had a couple phone calls and I don't remember which ones they were challenging, but then they would ask for the copies of those petitions, which are public record. So those petitions then would be sent over to them so that they could start reviewing them. But they'd have that 30-day window, so they've got a lot of work to cover if they're reviewing all 60,000 petitions.
Okay, so you actually send, so someone challenges it and you actually send them the boxes of...
Actually, it'd be copies.
Copies of...
Or an electronic version, yes. Yep, because of course the originals stay in our office, so we have that for any, you know, court case or, you know, moving forward.
And then it's on them to go through and look at all 60,000 of those.
Or 13, if it was a constitutional amendment, a lot of them are submitting 40, 50, 60,000. If it's an initiated measure, some of them are submitting 15, 20, 25,000 signatures.
And then what are they looking for?
You know, they're looking to see, are you truly a registered voter, and is it the county,
same
state?
Thing, yep, that you're
same
looking
thing.
For. Only
any incompleteness? Did you not fill out your town? Maybe, you know, the town wasn't listed and it should be listed, because we're looking for the completeness of that as well. Is the notary, you know, is it a verified notary public of the state of South Dakota, verification of the notary? So they're looking for any deficiency.
And who can make that challenge?
Like I said, any citizen.
Any
can
citizen.
Do, yeah, any
can.
Citizen, yeah. Or a group or organization, that can be.
And the goal of challenging something is essentially to keep it off the ballot.
Or even place it on the ballot.
So,
and I haven't rejected anything yet. So at this point, it would be to keep it off the ballot. But if I were to say in the next two that I'm working on right now, if we would say they don't have enough signatures, it's rejected and it won't be on the ballot because it didn't receive a valid number of signatures, they could challenge that rejection, say, wait, we think we did. And then challenge that and say, we think these are valid signatures, and we want it on the ballot.
So tell me when we were talking about these in sort of a procedural method, but what kind of things are we actually talking about here that people in South Dakota are going to look forward to having to make decisions about?
Sure.
You want to outline some of the highlights?
Yes, Lori. Well, you know, and there's already been three referrals from the 2015 legislative session. So when you look as an overall to the general citizen of South Dakota, to the voter of South Dakota, you're going to have a long ballot. I mean, quite frankly, when you somebody commented the other day, say, well, we're going to have chairs at the polling places, you know, chairs at the booth. The voting booth, you know, because it's going to be an extensive ballot. When you look at the potential number of measures that you'll be voting on, not only candidates in the 2016 election, you have a presidential candidate, United States Senate race, United States House race. You'll have further down the ticket, Public Utilities Commission race. Then you'll have, of course, legislative races, county races, and then you'll get to those ballot questions and referrals. And of course, the legislative session from 2015 had some referrals that were challenged on their decisions. So that was, remember, the minimum wage referral. Sure. That was, for example, that's going to be on the ballot. So you could have potentially up to 11. And then if the 2016 session, if anybody challenges a decision that the legislature makes and refers that to the ballot, we could have potentially more. So at this point, it could be up to 11 measures that you would be voting on and have pro and con statements.
Wow.
Now, that's a very large number. And I think the most recent year had been 2006 with, like, I think 8 measures. And then going back into the early 1911 and 13 was that large of a number.
Do you get a bigger turnout then, do you think, or a smaller turnout because the crowds or the lines are so long some places?
You know, I think in South Dakota, we don't really have a line issue. That's one thing that we've been blessed
with. I'm going to disagree with
you. Do you have a line in Clay County?
In Sioux Falls.
In Sioux Falls. Yeah, a couple places.
In Minnehaha County, we've got some lines.
Yeah,
that's been sort of an issue. So you have to go at the right time.
Right. Yeah. That's at noon, at 7 a.m. to 8 and from noon to 1.
I have stood in line for more than an hour to vote.
Oh, yes. That's good, though. I like to hear about that line. That's that civic participation. You know, I think this year being a presidential election year, your voter turnout. Now, South Dakota, we always rank high in the nation. We are 6th in the nation for voter turnout. You know, we're a populous state. We like to be involved. We kind of like to do our own thing. We're very engaged citizens.
And so give us a couple of these. I asked you that question, then I interrupted you because it was interesting.
Sure.
So give me a couple of the hot ones that we're looking for.
Yeah, I think the two that we hear typically a lot of conversation about is the initiated measure to set a maximum finance charge for certain licensed money lenders, that 36% cap. Then the other one is the opposite, the other proposal, the initiated amendment to the Constitution limiting the ability to set statutory interest rates for loans at 18%. So you have the contradictory or the two different limitations set, meaning cap set on interest rates.
And that's the one I'm confused about already, and I think lots of people are. So your advice, just do your research and really try to dig to the bottom of it and figure out what you're voting on.
Absolutely. You know, language. We in our office do and is required by state statute to put out and will print in August an informational ballot question pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
So it will describe the pros and cons, and that will be available at your county auditor's office. It'll be on our website, the Secretary of State's website. So it'll literally state the title and then the pro and con statements that are provided so that you can read through them and study them. And it's going to be probably 8 to 10 pages long, that pro and con statement, so that you can read through that so that you can understand those measures. And I'm assuming you'll see some advertising too.
Right. And then, you know, every time I go through a procedure like that, whether it's you're registering your child for school or going to vote, I think, what about the people who don't speak English as a first language? What about the people who have less education and have some literacy issues? Is there any help for those kind of folks to figure out this process?
You know, and I think, you know, part of those is that, of course, the ballot is printed and we have assistance for the disabled. If there's anybody that has needing assistance, whether it be in a larger print or, you know, we talk about access and, you know, whether it be inability to get to the polls, access, making sure that all polls are handicap accessible. Mm-hmm. In language, that would probably be something that you'd go to an office that maybe the offices in Sioux Falls that provide that language assistance.
Sure.
Where they're taking the classes of the citizenship classes, we have that information provided to them so that they can translate there, and so that's a good example for those voters. Now, have they taken the class, become a United States citizen?
Mm-hmm.
Then at that point, can they be registered voters? They have to become a United States citizen to be a registered voter.
Sure, sure. How about another one?
Sure.
So,
another one that we can visit about. This is an interesting one, an initiated amendment to the South Dakota Constitution establishing nonpartisan elections.
Mm.
What that's saying then is that they're saying that it would not place the type of party affiliation behind the candidate's name. So if Lori Walsh was on the ballot, it wouldn't say you're a Democrat, a Republican, or Independent, or Constitution, or whatever the established party is, or recognized party in the state of South Dakota. That is what it would be placed behind there. It wouldn't say that. So it would be nonpartisan. It would just have the name of the candidate and no a party affiliation.
Okay.
That's one we've been getting a lot of questions on. Redistricting Commission initiated amendment to the South Dakota Constitution to provide for the state legislative redistricting by a commission. You know, currently that's done by the legislative process and voted on part of the process, and this is saying that they want to establish a legislative redistricting commission so that a commission would be decided upon. And then I believe in this language, it states who's on that commission.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Let me tell you, Lori, about some pistol permits. You talk
about... Yeah, I was going to say, we were going to...
I know we just mentioned that before we got on the air, because that has been a hot topic lately in the news. Right. The numbers, since our office issues pistol permits, or I should say concealed carry weapon permits in the state of South Dakota, we have 85,000, over 85,000 active permit holders in the state of South Dakota right now. So that means that you have a permit to carry a concealed weapon. That doesn't mean you don't have to have a permit to have a weapon in your home, right. But only if you're carrying a concealed weapon, that's when you'd have to have that permit. And again, you get that through the sheriff of the county that you live in or reside in. In this past year, calendar year 2015, we issued over 22,000 new permits, or 22,000 new and renewed permits, which was one of the largest increases we've seen. And specifically in the month of December, which was really interesting. December of 2014, they issued about 1,500. We did in the month of December. Last December, just a month ago, December 2015, we issued over 3,000 permits in 1 month. I will tell you, on Monday, yesterday, in the mail, we received over 600 permits in just one day. We usually get about 600 or so a week.
Right.
We received 600. Today, received another 150.
So what does that indicate?
You know, we're
speculating.
Yeah,
on what
you know,
that means.
We are, Lori. We're taking a personal opinion and speculating, but I would say it's probably directly related to events on the national level. You know, and obviously the president had issued an executive order, and I think it's raised some serious concern, especially here as South Dakotans and concealed carry holders in South Dakota.
So do you think when South Dakotans hear something like that executive order and they go to get their concealed weapon permit, are they casting an unofficial vote? Are they securing something that they feel is being at risk of being taken away from them? Or are they just reminded, oh, yes, I have this right and I'm going to exercise it?
I think it's all three of the above, Lori. You know, the calls that we're getting into our office is like, how do I do it? How do I get there? Where do I go? You know, so I think it's just based on the response is, okay, yep. Second Amendment rights. I have this right to do so, and it's a reminder. Maybe I need to renew mine. Maybe it's expired, or you know what? I feel like I, you know, want to protect my rights and my Second Amendment rights to be able to carry. So I think it's all three of the above, Lori.
Did that executive order have any direct impact on citizens of South Dakota at this point?
When you look at the language, it's more related to the dealers and the issuance of guns at a dealer or at a gun show, and I think that's where you're seeing it. And we will be linking up, and we're still waiting for the official executive order language so that we will have that on our website so that people can go to that and look at that.
Mm-hmm. Any changes that you anticipate in that coming from a state government level?
Not from our office. Of course, the legislature would have to take action on that with a state statute change or an amendment, and I'm not hearing anything at this point, but there may be some language that's, I'm not hearing anything yet, but we're early. It's day one.
That's right.
A lot can happen.
I know you have to get going here in just a minute, but is there anything else that you wanted to add to our conversation today?
You know, I think, Lori, just in general, you know, we're an active group of citizens of South Dakota, and I'm very honored to be the chief elections officer, but it's an election year. So I just want to remind you, June primary is coming up. You'll have a presidential primary to vote on, and hopefully get out to those polls. Make sure that you're registered to vote. You can do up to 2 weeks prior to that election. So make sure you're registered to vote. You can vote absentee request. You know, so if you need to start voting as you're a little, going to be gone, that 46 days prior, you can start voting absentee in person. We don't have really officially early voting in South Dakota, but that's a generic term, but it's actually absentee in person where you can make that absentee request, or you can go and walk into your county courthouse, your auditor's office, and vote absentee right there in person. That would be considered like an earlier vote. And then, of course, they retain that absentee ballot until election day. But just want to make sure you're registered. It's a great year. 2016 is a presidential year, so get out and vote.
Chantel Krebs, thank you so much for your time on a very busy day. I know you have to dash out, so I'll say farewell, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Lori.
That is Chantel Krebs, Secretary of State, and that is our Dakota Midday for today. We hope that it's served you. I'd like to thank our guests, Chantel Krebs, Seb Axtman, Korean War veteran, the South Dakota Secretary of Veterans Affairs was Larry Zimmerman, Aaron Pollard, Pak Soon Chung Nim, and Han Jung Woo were all here with us today. As always, thank you to Steve Zwemke, and next to me, Steve Munson. Tomorrow on Midday, we will sit down with Governor Dennis Dugard. What do you want to ask the governor? You can send me a question. I'll do my best to pass it along. My email is midday@ sdpb.org, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Tomorrow, the Dakota Political Junkies are also with us, as well as the governor, Dana Ferguson, from the Sioux Falls Argus leader, James Nold, with the Associated Press, will sort out the first week of the session. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lori Walsh. Meet me right here tomorrow at noon Central, 11 Mountain. Thanks for listening.